Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland. Welcome back to my channel. This video is about the decline and fall of the British Army, which was once mighty, victorious many times, and of course, suffered some ignominious defeats. It's only got around 70,000 full-time soldiers. That is fewer than 300 years ago. Bear in mind the population of the United Kingdom is now 70 million. Three centuries ago, it was 6 million. So proportion of the population, it's far, far smaller than it was then. Admittedly, numbers aren't everything. These days, this technology can be a force multiplier. A lot of things that had to be done by muscle can be done by machinery, and drones can replace soldiers. But not wishing to be disrespectful, but the British Army is just now puny. The numbers are very, very low. At the end of the Cold War, it was over 150,000. It's the Territorial Army, which is like the part-timers. They've been run down as well. By the way, I was never a soldier. I'm just a civilian, commenting on a few of the publicly available facts. So soldiers sign up to a 5-year contract. Not enough are signing up. They can leave before the 5 years expire if they buy themselves out by paying several thousand quid, which few can afford to do. At the end of 5 years, they might be offered another 5-year contract and another if they're decent. But fewer and fewer are opting to stay on. The salary is uncompetitive. Britons can also enlist in the Australian Army for double the salary. And moreover, that salary will buy you so much more in terms of property in Australia, a better standard of living, there's better weather, and. From an army which is completely familiar, which was really cloned off the British Army, the rank structure and everything is the same. So it's a very easy transition. So unemployment is low, and traditionally that makes military recruitment more difficult. There are other things. When people used to apply to join, they had to take a year to start basic training. And people were rejected for ridiculous reasons, as in they'd have some tattoos that were visible when the uniform was on, things like that. One of my friends was half Finnish. He'd done his military service in the Finnish Army, wanted to join the British Army, and they were not sure. The RAF actually rejected him on the basis he might be called back to join the Finnish Army again. Anyway, what I say about the Army, largely the same applies to the Royal Navy and the Royal Air Force. The Royal Marines, of course, part of the Royal Navy. So under 10% of British soldiers are women. One of the ways to solve the recruitment crisis is if they could persuade as many women as men to volunteer, there would be no recruitment problem. But I don't know of any army in the world with this parity of numbers between the sexes. Somehow feminists don't seem to complain about that one. So, I mean, unemployment is low in the UK, but possibly rising because this tax on jobs with national insurance contributions on the employer side going up. And traditionally, they recruited working class white boys. There are fewer of those in absolute and relative numbers. And obviously, ethnic minority people are just as good in the army, but the army has difficulty persuading them to join in the same number as whites. And obviously, there were some white supremacists in the British Army decades ago, but they've been purged. So strenuous efforts to attract more females have not met with much success. Women were able to join the army on an equal basis since, I think it's the late 70s. Anyway, so to get more women in, sometimes they've lowered the fitness standards. Of course, women sometimes have to take time off for maternity. They're not combat ready if they're pregnant. Now, the army previously banned beards, except for those who had exemptions for religious reasons or dermatological reasons. As in, there's a skin complaint, shaving would irritate the skin, but they realized that a beard, they said it doesn't reduce military efficiency, therefore anybody who wants a beard can have them. Let's not reject a perfectly good candidate just because he wishes to wear a beard. Although the trouble is, if you're wearing a beard, if even one follicle is coming out, it wouldn't be airtight and a gas mask. So the Sikhs had an exemption that dates back to British India. Should they have carried that over into the British Army anyway, they chose to. It's a concession that could be granted. It can't really be rescinded, even though it spoils the uniformity of things. I think Muslims got it as well. But anyway, you don't need to cite a religious reason. If you want a beard, you can grow a beard. So the army takes school leavers, mostly with few, if any, qualifications. About 25% of the intake would be those joining at 17. They had to have parental permission, but they can't be sent to a combat zone until 18. Now, I realize an enlisted soldier does not need to be an intellectual. And to be candid, some of them are scarcely literate, but they could still be outstanding soldiers. They could have other gifts, but they have to have a certain mental age to join And obviously you could be very clever and be an enlisted soldier, but I think usually they're not terribly academic types. Those who attend university are far less likely to want to join the army. And these days about 45% of youngsters go on to university. So that's again shrunk the pool of potential recruits. Of course you could take a degree and join the army, just unusual to do so. And graduates can apply to be army officers. They can go to Sandhurst, that's the Royal Military Academy. You could go there straight from school with A-levels like Prince Harry, but again, very few of them do that these days. It's just a one-year course at Sandhurst. And again, it's way less academic than in the United States. West Point is degree. They get a degree there, 4 years. And, you know, in the Republic of Ireland, our army officers, they all have degrees. They have to go to the University of Galway, partly because not many other people want to go there. So the military housing is substandard. And that's often a leading factor in people quitting the army. So the accommodation is quite easy and cheap to solve, but it's not being solved. There's rising damp, there's mold on the walls, it's unhealthy, there's no hot water, and they just get fed up and they're putting their children through that. So military recruitment was contracted out to a company. So a young person who applied to join the army would speak to a civilian first, and it'd be months before they spoke to a military person. And so many applicants found this off-putting. So somebody who's enthusiastic wants to join now. You have to wait for a year sometimes. For a 17-year-old, that's a very, very long time. So many applicants were sick of this protracted process. And by the time they're invited to basic training, they said, no, I've taken another job. I'm not coming. I like my new job. I'm not giving it up. Why would I risk this stable and enjoyable job for the army, which messes me around? So the UK's got this mind virus called anti-wokery. It's a very pernicious form of racism. And sexism is anti-male, anti-white, and all the rest of it, anti-hetero. It's really injustice and imbecility on steroids. The United Kingdom is trashing its own heritage. I'm all for objectivity, for critically examining Britain's past, and certainly knowledge the United Kingdom has not always been fair in its dealings with other countries. It's been unrighteous sometimes, been the wrong side of some wars, aggressed some other countries. There are British soldiers who committed crimes, even atrocities. So I'm very grown up and honest about that. But the United Kingdom excessively emphasizes these. And it's like many British people are led to believe the United Kingdom is uniquely and almost and completely evil. We're told that toxic masculinity ruined the world. Well, obviously, sometimes save the world. So British children are increasingly actively anti-patriotic. Remember in 2009, some school children in London demanded the British flag not be flown at their school, and they got their way. No other country in the world would allow that, the children to stop the national flag being flown. So given this ambiance, it's scarcely surprising that not many Britons are joining the army. And there was an opinion poll done, and under 30s, would you be willing to fight for the United Kingdom? Only 10% of people said yes. That was staggering and frightening. Now, obviously, I'm not a militarist, and I don't want people to be too gung-ho or bloodthirsty or something, but it shouldn't go to the other way either. So the UK's got the Human Rights Act, which in some ways is a good thing. It's made people very litigious, and the United Kingdom often investigates soldiers on suspicion of crimes committed in war zones. There have always been laws of war. The British Army's always had courts martial. A war doesn't mean that absolutely all acts are permissible. It can't be just open season on anyone. So the United Kingdom government is perhaps unduly onerous in its investigation and prosecutions of alleged malfeasance by its service personnel. Special Air Service, SAS, is the British Army's ultra elite force. So it's got to be hyper aggressive. Often it's actually just observing things rather than killing people. And I went to talk by Andy McNab, one of their more distinguished troopers, although some people think he's a bit of a confabulist about Bravo 2-0, their mission in Iraq in 1991. So SAS troopers have been investigated for allegedly committing crimes in Afghanistan. This is making them more hesitant about joining the army. And soldiers have got to be able to know that they can carry out their mission, frankly, kill the enemy, without fear of being prosecuted decades later. Even if they're acquitted, the stress of that, the disgrace of that, some will say, oh, they did it, but they just got away with it. So the Northern Ireland conflict raged from 1969 to 1998. It was a glorious victory for freedom. Justice triumphed over terrorism. Democracy prevailed. The conduct of the British Army was not entirely inculpable. men and women now being investigated for crimes from 55 years ago, alleged crimes. And so some veterans are incensed as going on, as hundreds of terrorists, including those with murder convictions, were let out on the street ages ago and no investigations into them. I mean, I think the thing is to be consistent, say no investigations into anybody, that's it. But the British Army is open to all Commonwealth citizens as well as Irish citizens. So the Army could make more strenuous efforts to recruit in Commonwealth countries, such as Nigeria, Pakistan, but the UK wants to reduce immigration. So how do you square that circle? In some of these Commonwealth countries, if they're less economically developed, the British Army salary would be highly attractive. Now, the Gurkhas, they're part of the Indian Army since 1812. The British officers of the East India Company Army were mightily impressed by the martial qualities of the Nepalese in the Nepal War. And after defeating Nepal, they secured the permission of the Kingdom of Nepal to recruit Gurkhas. Anyway, on Indian independence, the Gurkhas were offered the choice to stay with the Indian Army, the British Army, most plump for the former because it was familiar. Nevertheless, the British Army recruits over 250 Gurkhas per annum. And a few years ago, it started recruiting women as well as men for this. The landmark ruling in 2012 said that the Gurkhas who were honorably discharged after a decade's service were entitled to stay in the United Kingdom for life. Now, the blatant solution is to increase the recruitment of Gurkhas, which that works very, very smoothly. There are often 100 applicants per place. So the army could recruit more Gurkhas or could recruit tenfold more without significantly sacrificing quality. There's also the lack of assets. They're too old. They're too cheap. The tanks are said to be excellent, but there are only 140 of them. Start of the Ukraine war is found out that the British Army had only enough shells for 8 days of fighting. It's increased production by a factor of eight since then, but it's gifted a lot to Ukraine. Financial constraints means it doesn't have enough equipment. Doesn't always have the latest technology. There's been sleight of hand and false accounting by chancellors like George Osborne, and the UK's not spending enough, just over 2% of its gross domestic product, but it needs to be way more. His Majesty's government said they'll raise it to 2.5% of GDP, but sine die. So there's serious economic difficulties in the UK. Tax rises have made millionaires emigrate. The cost of borrowing has increased. The economy is flatlining. The ballooning costs of wealth, healthcare, social care, pensions have been total mismanagement by the Labour government. So in the UK has also gifted significant quantities of assets to Ukraine since 2022, like 10% of its tanks. These are usually ones at the end of their service lives, going to be retired anyway. So troop numbers, although they matter less than they did, they still matter. So anyway, it's very bleak. It's hard to see how it's going to be turned around. Well, thank you for watching my video. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Toodaloo. Hello.
Well, hello.